We are the UFO Congress. Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin, and of course, we are in Laughlin, Nevada, and we are at the Aquarius Resort Casino, and we have Paula Harris with us, who we developed a good friendship with over the last couple of years, and also a great working relationship. And I'm going to talk to you about this book in detail, Paula. I like it already because it has my picture in it.
Yes, it does.
How are you, by the way?
I'm doing really well. Thank you, Jerry. I'm glad you're here because you're covering a really important Congress at a time, a really important time in history.
Well, let's go over the exact title. It's Exopolitics. And you've really, in the last two or three years, gotten really involved in this, haven't you?
The reason why we call it exopolitics, though, is because we take it for granted that there is already an extraterrestrial presence on Earth. So we know this, and we don't have to go and look at all the lights in the sky and categorize them and so forth. I've interviewed military people, astronauts, intelligence people, and people who have had contact experiences. I already know that this is a reality. So my concern is, where do we go from here? And what exopolitics does is it takes it as, in a serious fashion and tells you, where do we go from here? Well, obviously, where do we go from here is we need to develop some protocols, and that's what my book is called, Exopolitics.
I noticed you have Dr. Michael Sala there. He wrote you the introduction.
He wrote the preface, and the book is called How Does One Speak to a Ball of Light? In other words, how do you meet these people? What do you say to them?
Okay, I love that title, when you get to the ball of light, how do you speak to it? Do you have an answer?
Well, obviously, these people aren't speaking English, Italian, Russian, and so forth. Mm-hmm. These beings aren't speaking all these languages, and these entities that are balls of light aren't speaking all these languages. So the answer is, the only way you could communicate is not going to be by language. It's going to be by telepathy and by images and by intent. So the first thing we need is peaceful intent, and then a communication system with mental communications. That's the only way you could do it.
Let's talk a little bit about your own personal experiences as a journalist. You've been everywhere in the world, and have you had a lot of experiences making contact with VTs, or have you not?
No,
ever?
Not really. But Actually, I've never had contact.
The reason
experience.
I ask you is, I've been doing these type of shows for 40 years, Paula, and until I went to the Phoenix Lights a couple of years ago to do a special, it's the first time I've ever seen him on. A black triangle came by.
Really?
Yeah, while
That's
I was doing
amazing.
The show. Well, out by the Twin Peaks area, and we were making the tape and talking to a couple of people who had seen it, and one came between the peaks. And flew
That's
right
totally
by.
Amazing, you know. But you were doing the work beforehand, right?
You were doing.
You were like me. You're going on blind faith. You're doing the work beforehand. You're doing it, and you're assuming that it's true, and you're working mm-hmm. with it. And then all of a sudden, you were rewarded with a sighting.
Yeah, I guess maybe it is a reward. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Well, I had one this year when I was with all of my staff of Area 51 magazine in Italy. We were doing a conference one Sunday, and someone called us outside. And what we did is we saw this little piece. I call it a little piece of metal that would light up. It would light up, and then it would turn into a little piece of metal. It was stationary over Rome, over the conference site, for at least 10 minutes. So we were able to get pictures of it, and that was my first sighting.
Now, Rome and Italy in general seems to have a lot of activity all of a sudden.
Yeah, Italy is
having...
There are
a lot of lights in the sky recently?
Yes, and the Latina part of Rome, we're having, it's not so much lights, but we're having balls of light come out of the water, out of the ocean.
Oh, really?
And I'm assuming that if they're coming out of the water, there's some kind of base there. And people are confused because they aren't craft the way we understand craft. They are light energy. But light energy can also be transmuted into a stationary craft, solid craft. Most craft come out of light energy, and even beings come out of light. So that's one of the reasons I called this book, How Do You Speak to a Ball of Light? Because even NASA has seen pulsating light around the space shuttle. I mean, it doesn't have to be a craft. It's just light. And I think we need to get away from the stereotype of the gray or the reptilian or the whatever, because in a sense, we're dealing with intelligent light. intelligence. And so that's why my book is called that, but it's filled with interviews. It's got Paul Hellyer, the ex-minister of defense. It's got Edgar Mitchell. It's got two by Stephen Greer that are fantastic. It's got also the last lecture that John Mack did before he died. He came to Florence and I interviewed him. It's got so many different interviews because those are the people that are real experts, Jerry. Those are the people.
Now, when we talk about you've been doing this a long time. I don't want to date you, but
30 years.
My ideas have changed over the years. Obviously, from what I started when I first started, I just wanted to run up to the door, knock on the UFO, and interview somebody. You know,
yeah.
And now it seems to be maybe it's a complicated story, or maybe it's simple and we don't understand it. You know, it may be just layers of energy and light and another life form. I don't know. What's your opinion about all this?
Well, you know, I try to not come to a conclusion because if I came to a conclusion, then I'd spend my whole time trying to prove it.
Yeah, you got a good point.
I don't want to prove it. I don't want to prove the conclusion.
And a lot of people ask me about these things. Well, how do you really feel? And I say, well, I'm kind of agnostic. And what I mean by that is I want to keep an open mind.
Right, exactly. I think that's a good journalist does that, though, because if I came to a conclusion what it was, I wouldn't be interviewing people that don't believe like me.
Yeah.
So the thing is, I try my very best to listen to everybody, and really my job is to present word-for-word interviews. So I listen to the people I think that are credible, and then I do word-for-word interviews and present them to you and to other people out there that really can decide for themselves. They're intelligent. They know what's going on.
Right now, all of a sudden, they hear a little audience noise in the background. It's not because we lost interest. One of the sessions is over, and so I thought I'd mention that. You last year, you had a real coup, I thought, during the lunch hour. You kind of showed up here with a Paul Hellyer interview, and it was the talk of the convention, really.
Well, what happened was that I couldn't attend the Toronto conference, so what happened was that I flew personally to interview the Honorable Paul Hellyer in Canada, and he told me things that a politician usually doesn't have the courage to say, and what he said was that the presence of extraterrestrials on the Earth is a serious policy issue, and that we need to look at it in a political way, too, not just in a spiritual way. And he's really open-minded. He said, maybe these people like have evolved in their civilization and give us a hand because we're really in trouble. He said they could give us a hand because they're not fighting anymore, they're not fighting wars, and maybe they could help us. And actually, that was because of Paul. It's all part of the destiny. Paul Hellyer, I think, is an Al Gore. I mean, even Al Gore now, with his Inconvenient Truth, is showing us that we are going to need to be doing some things in order to save this planet.
Now when we talk about exopolitics in general, really, you are more interested in this group of people, like Dr. Sala and everyone else. Or maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like you're more interested in getting a bottom-up reaction, the people, instead of the government.
Well, no, the government is in a terrible position. They can't admit they're wrong. So the bottom-up would be college professors, people that are studying, like, Michael Sala is a college professor, but he's given a whole new light to ufology. I'm still interested in talking to astronauts. I'm still interested in talking to people that actually experience the thing, more than people who have a theory about the phenomenon. But in this Congress, in this particular presentation I'm going to be doing, Jerry, I'm going to be showing some work of a contactee in Italy who has given me 5 photographs of extraterrestrials, people that look like us. 2 of them are hybrid, and 3 of them are extraterrestrials that look like us. And this is going to be like a big anteprima. In other words, anteprima in Italian means it's a first. The people see the faces of these extraterrestrials, and that for Paula Harris is very different because I usually don't do contactee work.
Yeah, that sounds like a great, great little coup you have there. And you know, when you're talking about the 3 of them are 3 of them are ETs and 2 are hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit more about this.
Well, there's a contactee in northern Italy. His name is Maurizio Cavallo, who just before I came over here, I spent 2 days interviewing him. I mean, perfectly with an open mind, because you know how I am about the whole contact scenario. I'm not good at it. John Mack was good at it. But with an open mind, he gave me a clear picture of the fact that there are extraterrestrials on the Earth walking among us. He said they are living on this planet with us. And he explained that his contact came from a planet called Clarion. And then when I was about to leave, he asked me if I wanted to bring away anything. And I said, yeah, the photographs you gave, you showed me. He showed me two albums of photographs. He has videos. He has all kinds of film of light ships, like the Carlos Diaz ones that he himself has taken. And so I said, well, you know, can I take these to the United States? He said, yes, because the ETs, or the extraterrestrials, want to raise the frequency and want to kind of do a wake-up call. And he added, because the Earth is going to undergo some changes in the next couple of years.
Recently we used to talk about this being way off, these Earth changes, but now it's pretty obvious it's going to happen pretty soon.
It's not just us. I mean, the Al Gore movie is science. It's telling you it's going to happen pretty soon. You have the Native American prophecies. They are saying it's going to happen pretty soon. But as Stephen Greer said at this Congress,
yes,
it's not the end of a world. It's the beginning of a new one. So I really want to stress that it's like the birthing pains of a brand new situation that everybody should be excited about rather than depressed about.
Now, Paula Harris, I cannot let you get away without mentioning three hybrids and two ETs. No, it's the other way around. Without finding out a little bit more about that. I mean, how many are there among us? Do you have any idea?
Okay, what he told me was, the ones he showed me, there are two from Clarion, and the two from Clarion is you'll see a man who looks like he's very young, but they live to be 500 years old, and then you'll see a child, a Clarion child.
And are you going to put these on your website?
No, I'm going to just show them at the Congress right now because I don't have his permission to disseminate these photos.
Let's us out of showing them. Okay.
Okay. Well, no, you can. I'll ask permission when I go back to Italy.
Okay.
I do everything with asking permission. I have to do that. Otherwise, people don't trust me.
Well, that's one reason you get the stories, is you have a reputation. You know, your word is your bond.
Well, the people can trust me. I mean, if I'm asked not to do something, but since it's going to be printed in Area 51 magazine, I can send you the magazine, and you can put the article with the pictures on your website.
That's what we'll do.
So we could do it roundabout. He's afraid that disseminating the photographs, they get in the wrong
hands. Do you have any idea what month that'll be out in Area 51?
Right away. It'll be right away. And the thing is this, that he said there is a federation, and we've heard this before, that there is a federation of different kinds of aliens. And that's exactly what we're dealing with, this federation of different kinds of aliens.
Do you get the impression that they're a mixture of ideologies, or maybe that's not even the right term, ambitions of these extraterrestrial races? Are they all after the same thing or not?
Well, he said this. He said basically that we were seeded by these races. Now, you've heard that before. He said some of us are their children. We are star seeded. We were an experiment. I mean, they seeded this particular planet with these people, us, and they're waiting to see if we self-destruct. I mean, this is the obvious. Look at where we're playing with right now. And so he said that what these people told him was that the only way that we could possibly effect change was to raise the vibrational level of the planet. In other words, wake up everybody at a time in history. And that really, that's what you're doing with your radio show.
That's what we're trying to do. I don't know how successful we are sometimes.
No, well, your radio show, I don't think is just entertainment. I think your radio show is one where you're giving information to people. And for the people that really want to wake up and look at the situation the way it is, it's great. For the other people, they can continue watching the game. I mean, it's like whatever they want to do, it's fine.
You have a busy schedule here, but we're going to ask you to stay through one more segment. We're going to take a break here in a moment. The name of the book again, Paula?
It's Exopolitics, How Does One Speak to a Ball of Light? Exopolitical Challenges and Protocols for Future Contact.
And we have links, of course, and you can find that at bookstores, and you can order it through our website. This is Jerry Pippen. We're broadcasting from the UFO Congress. We'll be right back.
Bach is very
It happened almost 60 years ago, but the debate still rages. Did an alien spacecraft crash outside Roswell, New Mexico in 1947? The most concise and complete series ever broadcast on Roswell, direct from Roswell. New programs added weekly. Check it out on the UFO Files on JerryPippin.com.
It looks like it's about 8 or 10 miles west.
Paula Harris is our guest. We're at the UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada. Paula had an exclusive. You always have something big for the UFO Congress.
But, you know,
Paula.
I don't plan this. I don't plan it. It's all
really?
Coincidence. Yeah, I didn't know this was going to happen.
Now, come on, Paul. You come up with, I mean, remember you had Charles Hall here at one time?
Yeah, that was a coincidence, too. Actually.
Yeah, or really?
No, the story is that I'm very open. And what, you know, okay. About, you know, five or six people had talked to Charles Hall. And had walked right by him. I was the one that sat down and said, this man is not making something up. He is remembering. There is a difference between remembering and making something up.
Really, that's probably your success. And I think it's somewhat my success. A lot of people are closed-minded. They just don't listen to these things.
Well, I think they're afraid. I think fear is what stops them. They say it's too incredible. Well, this is all incredible. This is not something
normal.
Yeah,
it's just, right.
Oh, I mean, we...
If we went to this room and started listening to these conversations to the normal person, if we could tape them, people wouldn't believe it. And this is normal conversation for these people, but it's unusual circumstances.
Yeah, it's unusual circumstances, but also we need to think that we're not just little people on this planet, that there's a whole galaxy out there, and it would be an incredibly stupid, egotistical thing to think that we're the only people around
in the whole galaxy. I meet people like that.
Well, maybe it's a little world they've created. That's fine. The only thing is, if there are these kinds of people from Clarion, we were talking about this contactee saying there are other people, I think I'd like to meet them, and I don't think I'd like to shoot first and ask questions later, the way we've done with Native Americans and all the people that are diverse that we don't understand, that don't look like us. I'd like to try to make it a peaceful encounter.
You know, talking about shoot first and ask questions later, it appears to me that perhaps we've done that before in the past.
Absolutely, we've done that before. We've done that with our greatest leaders, too.
Right.
We've done it with our greatest wise leaders. Right. We've done it with anybody that we don't understand. I did an interview in my book with Kiwani, who is Jack Leoparditis, who talks about Sasquatch, who talks about the Bigfoot. And he's got film footage of this creature, of this person. You know, he's got film footage, so it's real. Bigfoot is real. What would you do? Shoot it when it is an interdimensional being that has a family, that is a regular you can classify him as an ET. What you'd like to do is try to figure out why a Bigfoot is walking around on the planet, from what dimensional porthole he comes from or what place he comes from. It is part of our everyday reality that people don't want to face because, you know, Jack's work is very, very documented. It's very, very credible. And he says that the Bigfoot can feel when someone's going to pick up a rifle and shoot it because that's how we deal with things we don't understand.
There's no excuse for our behavior, and you and Dr. Sala and a few others are trying to change that a little bit.
Well, what we want to do is study it. I mean, studying it means that you don't make a decision, right? If you're if you're doing a scientific experiment, you don't make the decision whether it's bad or good or whatever. You study it. And since I have a master's in education, I'm a teacher, I would love to see this in the universities. So you can't put ufology in the universities, but you could put exopolitics in the universities because Carl Sagan did exobiology, if you remember. He did biology from outside the planet. Well, maybe we could put exopolitics in a university and have the students study by reading.
Maybe we have a university president or somebody in charge of curriculum someplace that contact with Paula Harris. I don't know if she would be interested in teaching the course.
I'm doing it right now to the Exopolitics Institute from Hawaii. I have two students. Michael Sala has a certificate, but there's several courses people have to take. He gives a certificate from the institute, and one of my students is in Dubai, and the other student is in Boston, and they give me their homework online, and I correct it, give it back to them, and I also recommend books for them. And these people are telling me that it's the greatest experience and education they've ever had.
Now, we have a link to Paula's website. Contact her if you're interested in that. I imagine you'd like to have other students.
I would love to have students like this because, you know, what it is a serious way of studying ufology. And also, there is a lot of dialogue. You know, when you have a good course, you can dialogue with the professor. And that's, I think, what Dr. Sally Alford Weber and I are really going for. It includes a lot of ufology. I have Clifford Stone in my book. I talk about Al Bielek, the Philadelphia experiment. I have Yvonne Smith, who talks about psychoanalysis in contact cases. I have John Mack. I have Edgar Mitchell, who talks about quantum cosmology. So these people have so much to share with us, and I'm hoping people still read, that they don't just watch videos.
But you do have a good selection of pictures in here, folks.
Oh yeah, but I always do pictures. I always do images. So I have 13 pages of photos. Yes.
And we'll give the name of the book again before we wrap it up. But I can't wrap this conversation up without going back to the thing you're talking about in this conference. With the two
with the contactees. Okay, so it's ironic that we have photographs of ETs.
Yeah.
We do have photographs of ETs.
Now, you didn't get to meet them personally, though.
No, because it doesn't work like that. This contactee in northern Italy has photographed them with their permission, and he's used Polaroid film, so I don't think you can really modify Polaroid.
Right.
So I saw the Polaroid pictures of these beings, plus regular photographs of these beings, and with their permission, they're allowing their images. And it's going to be big, because I think the only pictures we've ever seen of humanoid aliens is the Billy Meyer Ascot picture, if you remember.
Right, I remember
those.
Okay,
well, these are incredible, and they're beautiful. And
now, what type of people do they... I mean, since we don't have the pictures yet, we have to wait till the magazine comes out, or they have to be here at the conference. What do these people look like? Are they Scandinavian or Italian?
No,
or,
they have a different size head. Their head is a little bit bigger. The eyes are almond-shaped. Underneath the eyes, they have a bluish cast. I never understood what blue skin looked like until I saw this. And then they have the most beautiful expression on their faces, very little hair. Two of them have very little hair. And regular features, lips and nose like ours. And just beautiful, a little bizarre in that they're very high energy. In other words, when you look at the image, you have a reaction.
In other words, we'd call it charisma in show business.
Yes, and the gentleman looks like a movie star, except for his eyes. So
they out walking among us?
Yes, the gentleman.
And people don't notice the blue skin.
Right. No, that's the hybrid that has the blue skin. But
okay.
the gentleman that he gave me the photograph of the alien from Clarion looks exactly like us, except for his eyes. And that person works in a regular job.
And they live in Italy now?
Well, they live in Italy. They live in Spain. The UMO live in Spain.
Okay.
And they are ETs. In Scandinavia, the Charles Hall story told you about the Nordics that have the 32 teeth, I think he said. So there are people, I think, everywhere that could be among us that are ETs. It's just that, you know, they navigate in and out of the situation.
Now, I guess the ETs themselves would know they're ETs, but the hybrids probably don't.
No, the hybrids are, some of these hybrids are contactees, and when they're put under hypnosis, they realize, like this contactee in Italy, that his mother was taken. Therefore, he was inseminated through his mother, and he realizes he's got some kind of connection to the Clarion race. But he's a regular artist. He's a painter, and that's what he does for a living. But he paints the most incredible landscapes.
Well, now we know you're going to be in Roswell later. Are you going up to Montreal?
No, not this year.
Okay.
I'm going to be in Switzerland with Monsignor Balducci, and I am going to be in March in England with Probe. But then I will be in Roswell with you.
That's right.
Yeah, I'll be in Roswell. That's the 60th anniversary party.
That's right. So we'll find out more
party.
About that. In your world travels, and since you are an international person, dual citizen, sort of, I guess you are.
Yeah, I'm a dual citizen.
Yeah, right.
Right.
is there another place like Roswell? Any place else in the world where that really the first public?
That isn't the first crash.
I know
but
that.
But that is the place where all the people that are in tune with this reality, I'm not going to use the word believe because that sounds like religion, in tune with this reality go. It's the Mecca for people that know that we are not alone. It's the place where they can join and all speak together and nobody thinks they're crazy because this is the kind of world we live in. And because it's the 60th anniversary, it's been orchestrated to have reunions of speakers down there. And you'll be broadcasting from there,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right. And we'll be there, and you'll probably have a venue that they'll be able to see you. Definitely, you'll be there with meeting everybody
whole week. And Yvonne Smith, my friend, will be at the UFO.
Yeah, I met Yvonne, and we'll have her on here pretty
soon. She's at the UFO Museum with Daryl Sims. Uh-huh. And then Richard Dolan, who's also at this Congress, will be there. And they will be at the convention center. So there's a lot of speakers. And for people that feel comfortable speaking about this, Roswell is the place. I mean, it's hard to go to work and speak about it in your cafeteria.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I like about coming here, though, the UFO Congress, is the international flavor.
Right.
There are people from all around the world go to Roswell, too. But a lot of contactees and people with experiences, they just kind of seek out places like this, and mm-hmm. you find good people. I know that's one reason you come.
Yeah, I come because, I'll tell you, I'm one of the people that doesn't sit at my book table because I'm never there. I'm listening to the speakers all the time. I have to know what's going on. I just heard the most incredible speaker. It's Kerry Cassidy and Ryan.
Bill Ryan.
Bill Ryan's.
They work with us very closely.
Yeah, Ralph Ring, who just...
they just finished, I think.
They just finished, and
right.
he talked about being in a UFO, that they had constructed it, and he talked about how that was done with Tesla technology. Now, for me...
We're talking about Ralph Ring, and Ralph will be on the show later today.
Well, you know, as a journalist, I can sit there in that room and not learn anything, but I'd rather be in here listening to everybody's speech so that I can bring back something for what, you know, for Italy. I was fascinated with that lecture, and that is something I will bring back. Plus, listening to other people talk, I think, is something that is a part of my job. It's a responsibility. But then, you know, you're torn between being at your book table, because my new book is coming out, and going into the lecture. And I've chosen to go into the lecture series.
Well, you have a few things going on at this conference that we can't talk about as well. You're always working on a lot of things, Paula.
Yeah, actually, you have another interview that'll be very interesting because of the conference. I'm trying to be a facilitator, a go-between, but you're doing the same thing. You and Roberta are doing the same thing.
Fantastic. Let's,
we're all in this together.
Speaking of Roberta, how much time do we have left, Roberta? We'll get a couple of minutes, so we will...
You know, what we want to encourage people, though, to read more, to keep an open mind.
Yeah, and we want to plug the book in this last 2 minutes, and I want to give you an opportunity to get something off your chest. Have you got anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, I want to talk about the O'Hare incident.
Right.
Are you kidding?
Okay.
I mean, don't you think that's great that they cannot stop a UFO from appearing over a major airport?
Yes.
I really believe that the O'Hare incident, I'll talk about that in my talk, is one of the key incidents of the century. You've got a UFO over an airport where the people know the difference between an airplane and a UFO. You've got all these people watching it. You've got the Chicago Tribune having to report it, and you've got CNN and the television channels having to report it because it really happened. Now, what if it happened over all the major airports?
Well, you got a point there. And the interesting thing, did you try to contact the Tribune reporter? I did. A couple of times. I really didn't get a nondescript reply. I don't know what I'm trying to get a read on him.
Well, they're obligated to report it, but they weren't happy. They weren't happy campers. At the beginning of my presentation, I'm going to show that piece where they're so confused and so embarrassed that they have to report this.
Okay,
I
great.
Think that's funny.
Well, true to life. Let's talk about the book real quick.
Okay, well, the book is called Exopolitics. How does one...
I hate to make you hype your own book, but that's the way it goes.
All right. Exopolitics. How does one... How does one speak to a bottle of
light? If I was some kind of gentleman, I would do it myself.
No, that's okay. If people want to read word-for-word interviews and know what's happening currently, the book is Exopolitics, How Does One Speak to a Ball of Light, Exopolitical Challenges and Protocols for Future Contact, and it's through Author House, and think they'll get a lot of information.
And as we say, we have a link so you can go over and buy the book from Paula's website and a few other places is available too. They can find this book if they want it.
Yeah, they find it on Amazon and through Author House. It's not on my website, but I mean, they'll find it through those places.
Go to Amazon, folks. We'll put a link there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and
this was fun.
we're gonna look forward to doing some more stuff together in Roswell.
And
we'll run across each other here. We still got a few days to go.
Yeah, we do. I see Robert Miles here. He's the producer of Fast Walkers.
Right.
And I'm in that with Monsignor Balducci, which is...
Yeah, you look great.
It's a big, you know...
I'm in it, too.
You're in it, too.
But I don't have a priest with me.
No, you don't have a priest with you who speaks Italian. So, you know, people should really look at Fast Walkers. It's a very classy production. It's done very well. It covers all the different areas of contact, and I think that there's when they finish watching it, you definitely have a feeling of not only information but of inspiration.
Okay, thank you very much, Paula Harris, and this is Jerry Pippin. We've enjoyed it always, and we look forward to seeing you later. Robert Short came by, and we're going to talk to him a little bit, and we also have Robert Miles and a few other people. And he's now introducing himself to Paula. Robert, we'll be back in a little bit. This is Jerry Pippin. Don't go away.
In March of 1997, a huge triangular ship appeared over Phoenix. Thousands saw it, and even now, years later, Phoenix is a place of UFO intrigue, sightings, experiences.
Didn't look like anything I'd ever seen in my life.
Hear about it on the Jerry Pippin Show.
This is Jerry Pippin and the UFO Congress, and of course that is in Laughlin, Nevada, on the beautiful Colorado River with the Aquarius Casino Resort. We used to be at the Flamingo, but we didn't change locations, just names.
Just the name changed.
Yeah, that's Rod Simone, and
Rob,
a broadcaster of his own right. And Rob, by the way, I want to compliment you. Finally, got a book out. I don't know anybody that would be more qualified to write one than you.
Well, thanks, sir. I appreciate that.
The name of this book is UFO Crop Circles, The Mayan Calendar, Sacred Places, and a collection of articles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a compendium. I put together some of my research that has taken me around the world to various places of mystery, and I explore the kind of unusual surroundings of these sacred places.
Now, the book is just coming out, so it won't be available for a few weeks, right?
It'll be available next week, so by the time this airs, it'll be available.
Okay, well, we won't take this long this time. This show will be on tomorrow. So.
Oh, very good.
Or the day after, right in that time period. So beginning next week, they can order this book. Will it be available at certain places?
Yeah, absolutely. Through the website on Amazon, if they go to robsimone.com, it's RobSimone, robsimone.com. They can find it there.
Now, when we talk about this book and the articles and your world travel, we went right through that in one little sentence.
We did.
But
that was the headline.
Yeah, you're right.
But you have
not only been doing a UFO broadcast for a long time, but in addition to that, you've been out doing your own research, and I know you've spoken at conventions.
That's right. This book represents sort of the first step that I've taken to put in a concisive way some of the research that's taken me around the world. I have an article about the NASA footage that has been making such a large stir lately. What I've done through my radio show is interviewed some of the people that are key witnesses in the UFO-NASA connection, like Dr. Edgar Mitchell. Now, he was the sixth man to walk on the moon. right? Apollo 14. But he said something extraordinary. He said that through his connections, through his network of people in the military intelligence, they have confirmed to him that the government does have alien technology, even bodies of extraterrestrials through some sort of mishap, perhaps, through their craft. He's confirmed this through various sources. He's gone on the record and said it. And he himself is a proponent of what I like to call ufology, this emerging science. And he's one of the leaders. He even founded the Noetic Institute of Science up in California.
So he was told firsthand that there are E.T. creatures,
right.
bodies.
Right.
When he was, I assume from crashes.
Well, we have to assume that.
Yeah,
we have to assume that. But he himself is a genuine explorer. And when he took his ride into space, he had a sort of metaphysical, transcendental experience. He, for lack of a better word, was able to almost touch, you know, the face of God while he was spinning around in that little spaceship hurling through space. So that changed him forever. And he is, as I say, someone who's very important. That's one of the first articles in there. And the other ones dive into various aspects that on the surface might seem unrelated, but they really aren't, because there's an article in there about the Mayan calendar, which is only 5 years away from ending, by the way.
I understand that. And some people say the date may be translated a little differently. It may even be quicker.
Well, the 2012 cycle is the grand cycle of the Mayan calendar. It is the largest and the most significant of the Mayan calendar because there are so many different cycles. And what's even more significant, and what I point out in the book here, is that it ends December 21st, 2012, but the exact time that it ends is 11:11 a.m.
11/11/2012.
And that's extraordinary because you've probably heard people talking about this 11/11 that everyone's seeing when they and I too have had sort of inexplicable urges to look at a clock, and when I do, more often than not, it'll say something with 11 in it. Yeah, so that's an interesting little tidbit, but it goes on to explore the cycles, the Mayan calendar, what they mean, and even Mayan astrology, which is getting more and more validation from research groups.
What makes that different than, I mean, there's all kinds of astrology,
yep.
I know.
That's true.
But is there something that makes Mayan astrology different? I mean, do they use different planets or...
Well, that's,
or do we know?
Yeah, well, to answer that question, I'd have to tell you a little bit about the Mayan calendar and why it's so significant.
Yeah, let's get into that.
Yeah, because this is the extraordinary thing. The Mayans had this incredibly sophisticated calendar, and it still baffles researchers and scholars as to how they were able to assemble such an accurate way of measuring the workings of the cosmos. See, what their calendar is based on is the cycles and rotation of the stars and planets.
Mm-hmm.
So it is tied into the movements of our solar system and the universe. So that is where they derive their sense of time. Now, the other interesting thing is they were aware of something called precession. Precession is the wobble that the Earth has that's very slight. The Earth, of course, is on an axis. It's tilted slightly. But even that tilt has a slight wobble to it, which means the North Star, every 3,000-6,000 years, goes through a small circular rotation. But here's the kicker. They would have never have been able to known that because it takes 3,000 years to observe precession.
But they had...
They knew it somehow. Mm-hmm. So they were incredibly sophisticated. They had no way, no telescopes, no devices to speak of. They simply used, from what we know, keen observation, keen record keeping. And some have postulated that they might have had a little sort of extra-dimensional help.
Extra-dimensional, huh?
It could be that...
I've thought of maybe it was extraterrestrial, but it could be extra-dimensional.
Well, I say extra-dimensional because extraterrestrial comes under the umbrella of extra-dimensional.
Okay.
That's a broader term.
Okay, so, that's an intelligent way to describe it. You can't prove you're wrong. Not as easily.
Right.
See, Rob, it's no...
Yeah, so they have this incredible timekeeping system, and maybe they had some help. Maybe they were pushed in the right direction, because here is the point that brings it home to everybody right now who has a calendar hanging up in their home. The calendar that you have now is the Gregorian calendar, and what happened is that many years ago... Guess I hate to call them out again, but it was the church that decided that they were tired of having their religious holidays move a little bit every year.
It's kind of like U.S. Congress. They were tired of not getting Mondays off, so they moved the President's Day over to Monday and a lot of other things.
Well, the church has specific holidays, and they've always had them
for
saints and other things. Now, every year, since the calendar is a little uneven, that's why we have leap year, they would shift around, and they didn't want that. So they brought in this Gregorian calendar. They brought in the leap year. They brought in this calendar that doesn't quite fit. And the result of that... is that we have taken off ourselves from true time, which is time measured by the cycles of the universe, and we have moved to this artificial way of measuring time. And when we did that as a society, we short-circuited our intuition. We short-circuited our connection to the natural rhythms and cycles of the universe.
So in other words, you put a lot of stake... or a lot of stock, and you stake a lot of things information-wise on the idea that the Mayan calendar is pretty accurate.
Not only is it incredibly accurate, but they predicted events as well. They discovered the planet Pluto many, many years before it was officially discovered by Western scholars. And they even predicted the landing of Cortez, as sort of a false god or false prophet. And he landed on their shores and conquered that poor hapless civilization just as they predicted.
And they're predicting 11-11-2012.
That is the end
and
of
what,
the...
That just ends the calendar, right?
That's the end of the grand cycle,
so,
as it's called.
We don't know what they mean by the end of the calendar, or do we?
Well, actually, we know a few things.
Okay, what do we know?
We know this, that our... solar system and its planets that orbits the sun is part of a larger galaxy called the Milky Way. Now, I want you to picture the Milky Way as it's a thin galaxy. In other words, it's a spiral galaxy, but it's along a very sort of a wide plane. It's not a ball. It's more like a disc. And everything spins around, and we're kind of way out in the middle. But it is a disc. It's not a ball, so it's flat. And here's what we do know that does tie into this Mayan calendar and perhaps explains some of it. Our solar system not only spins around, but it also moves up and down. And what happens is it moves up and kind of away from all of the center of the disk and moves out into sort of empty space. It takes about 36,000 years to do this. And then it starts to come back into more of the dense part of where all the planets and where all the other stars and other things that are that make up the dense part of this of our galaxy. So we're truly entering into a different part of space. Now, the increased density of this space could have an inherent power, inherent energy that might activate, say, dormant stargates that are present on this planet. It could activate us in some way, because we truly are entering a more energetic part of space.
Right, you've been around the world, literally.
Yeah.
You were on a two-year trek, if I remember.
It was actually 3.5 years through 27 different countries.
See, I didn't remember.
But you were close. You were close. That's good.
What do you make of this Stargate story? I mean, we hear about them all the time.
We
portals, et cetera, et cetera.
We do.
What do you think of all that?
See, that's such a great area, because I believe that 2012 is going to bring us into some sort of paradigm shift. We're entering into a denser part of the universe. We see reflections of this starting to happen already. Take example, the Schumann resonance, which is the natural resonance of the Earth. It is rising from 8.6 hertz to approximately 10.2 hertz. And the reason why that's extraordinary is because there are correlations to the human braveway activity that happens at that same frequency, 10 hertz. That's where the mind resonates at. That's where the brain frequency is for most humans. And I say most humans because I know there's a few people out there that might be a little higher or lower. But why is that extraordinary? Well, anyone who knows anything about radio and sine waves and things like that, if you have two matching frequencies and you bring them into resonance, they strengthen each other and they become coordinated. And that sort of approach is what Tesla talked about. It's what Tesla was saying. And that's how some of his extraordinary inventions worked. So we're seeing a rise in the Schumann resonance. And as you say, I did travel all through these different countries, and a large portion of that was the Middle East. And I spent a lot of time out in areas near Mesopotamia, near Egypt, out in the deserts. And what I found more and more through looking through these tombs and crawling through these ancient temples were references to these places, these energized places that these ancient civilizations knew about in some way, shape, or form, believed that they could use them to enter into another dimension or could bring people through. And it's often sort of coded in their gods and their deities. So you have to look at Horus. So you have to look at the gods of the underworld. You have to look at Osiris. But the messages that run through these various sort of coded hieroglyphs is that they believed in some sort of place, some sort of temple that did more than just house the bodies of dead pharaohs. They believed it was a conduit or some sort of gateway that could be activated. And that technology, that knowledge is lost. And I don't think it was by accident. Supposedly there was a library underneath the Sphinx called the Alexandria Library. And again, we're going back to the great Vatican and the big religion, but it is often thought that it was them who scooped up this knowledge, and it now sits in some deep, dark catacomb underneath Vatican City.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that we did a show recently with some people from Portugal, professors, about the Lady of Fatima legend, and no one at the Catholic Church had actually looked at it since 1925. And they let these people in to look at it.
Okay.
And so it would make sense. It's buried someplace, and nobody's bothered to even read it recently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's possible.
That's right. Not only has the actual information been gathered up, but the information that has survived has been discredited and has been disinformed, meaning it has been put in sort of this skeptical garbage bin that nobody wants to touch. Mainstream science doesn't want to touch it. But in that arena,
nor do the religious people.
That's right. And they have their own sort of superstitions, mm-hmm. and unusual beliefs. You just look at the, let's look at the Catholic religion, because we just talked about them. Do you know what it means to be a saint in their religion? You have to perform at least one miracle. And if you look through the list of saints, you'll see that some of them had, for instance, some sort of body sweat that could heal people. Some of them were able to fly. Some of them were able to turn invisible. So woven into the Catholic dogma is the same sort of paranormal manifestations that we in the alternative information community talk about so much.
You mentioned looking for signs and messages.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back in a moment. I don't know of anything more mysterious. And maybe there's signs and messages there in crop circles.
Mm.
And your book starts off with UFO crop circles.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about the Mayan calendar, the second part of the book, and the sacred places, a collection of articles. So when we come back, Rob Simone will tell us about his impression and his investigations of crop circles. Don't go away. The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers, UFO and Alien Disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
as Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com. We are at the UFO Congress, and we're in Laughlin, Nevada. We're talking with our good friend Rob Simone, who is a broadcaster in his own right. Now he's got a book out. We'll be next week called The UFO Crop Circles, a Mayan Calendar, and Sacred Places, a Collection of Articles. Mm-hmm. And we will have a link there for this book so people can get it. It'll be available at what?
Through the website. I'm sure the link will take you right there. It's available at robsimone.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We will definitely link to that so people can get that book.
Thanks.
And in addition to that, now we're talking about books. Before I get into what we talked about, the crop circles, it's not too easy to write a book, even when you take things you've written already and decided what you're going to use.
Hmm.
Yeah, don't you agree?
It's
or was
true.
This just a piece of cake?
Well, I've actually written another book that's over 300 pages that is my complete research around the world. This is kind of the prequel. This sets up this sets the stage for various places and the interconnectivity of a different sort of paranormal manifestations like crop circles and stone circles and the Mayan calendar that on the surface might look like different subjects, but I demonstrate there is a common theme running through all of them.
And the common theme is a different dimension, a different reality, or what?
Well, in a nutshell, the common theme is ever since man and woman were able to scratch out an image on a cave wall, they have been leaving symbols and leaving markers that point to some sort of off-world visitation. It's woven into the cave paintings that go back 30,000 years, not only in France, but in Australia and in Africa, separated by thousands and thousands of miles. It's woven into the medieval art. It's woven into the Vedas and Upanishads of India, into the Holy Quran, into the Old Testament. On and on, we have an ongoing presence of some sort of off-world contact that manifests itself in different ways.
I've been inclined to agree with you completely on that. Mm-hmm. And one thing I want to ask you along that line before we get to crop circles,
yeah,
is can we pin down who planted us? In other words, we're all the Garden of Eden, maybe, or whatever, maybe just a story,
mm-hmm.
or it may be real in a certain extent or a certain circumstance, but it appears to me that we were placed here and developed.
Mm.
Do you think that happened?
Well, there are...
It looks like they dropped us off here or something.
Hmm. And why do people think that?
To me, the explanations of some of the things not only in the Bible or the Old Testament, but mm-hmm. a lot of other things, there's almost no other explanation for it.
Well, for example, there are reasons why people have trouble with this evolution of mankind. They can see it in the plants and the fauna that makes up so much of this earth. But when it comes to man, we're missing a very important missing link. And we can also point to the fact that genetically, we're much closer, almost compatible with a chimpanzee. But we are not as close to a gorilla. So we are very close in our genetic makeup to the chimpanzee species of monkeys, but not the gorilla. So it seems as though we are half Earth-based and half something else. And there was a recent article that just came out that points to our DNA as being largely off-world. This just came out in New Scientific America. It was recently published. It made a big splash through the internet. And it confirmed what a lot of people realize is that our DNA somehow, some way, was transported here
from other places. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
They may not have literally dropped a human being off. Mm-hmm. Where they may have, and the reason I use the term planted is developed would probably be a better word. Mm-hmm. We somewhat did evolve in some way or another, mm-hmm. and it just seems there's a big gap there, and we seem to be able to explain a lot of other things.
We can't find the missing link, and we see time and time again as the creator gods in various indigenous cultures being represented as people coming from the sky, people having appetites for local women, people, gods that embody some sort of human form. We see this all over again. In fact, I recently talked at the Conscious Life Expo, and I talked about my time in Australia. I lived there for a year, and I spent a lot of time with the Aborigines. Now, their creator god legends are fascinating because they sound very much like ancient astronauts, insofar as they would come down regularly. They even knew what kind of food that they liked. When they wanted something, they would point to it. And the craft that these creator gods would use was described as an egg. And it even made a sound. And the Aboriginals described the sound as a bull roar. Now, for those of you who don't know what a bull roar is, it is a specially shaped piece of wood, carved wood, on the end of a string. And they would spin this around at great velocity, would make this this very low growling sound. And the Aboriginals used this to communicate over long distances. Because this low frequency would travel very far.
Right.
But if you can imagine what that sort of sound would approximate, it would sound very close to perhaps a large jet engine, a large rocket engine, and having no other frame of reference, a bull roar would be the closest thing that they could compare it to. So time and time again, we see these creator gods in the form of ancient astronauts, and these are the ones that the ancient peoples refer to as their creators.
We're talking with Rob Simone, and we talk about all of this being related, and that brings me back to the crop circles, full circle, and the first part of your book is UFOs and crop circles, or UFO crop circles.
Crop circles, yeah.
I always thought crop circles were ET art. It's just my own personal opinion. But from listening to you and others who have researched a lot in this book, maybe it's more of a message. What do you think it is?
Well, you know, art often has a message. Sometimes art is for art's sake, but I think in the case of crop circles, it's safe to say that it's more of a message than it is about a pretty picture. Now, in this book, you refer to an article I wrote about crop circles, and it's called The Message and the Mechanics, because there are two components to this. There's the experience, and then there's the sort of analytical study of the physical nature of them. And I talk about both. Now, as far as the experience goes, I and many others have reported very strong reactions, very strong experiences when you venture into a crop circle that seems to be legitimate. In other words, that doesn't seem to be man-made. And I had an incredible experience in one of them. One morning, I was up very early because I used to work in London. I lived there for a year. And I still produce a radio show that airs there. And so I spent a lot of time out in the fields, because the funny part is that most of the crop circles that happen all over the world happen in a 20-mile radius of Avebury, which is right next to Stonehenge, which is only an hour and a half outside of London. So it's very accessible. And I managed to get there and spent a lot of time there. And one morning I found one that looked like it had just been made. I think steam was coming off of this thing. I mean, it looked brand new, and nobody else was around. There was no tracks leading up to it or away from it. And when I entered into this thing, I was taken over with what I can only call an out-of-body experience. And I talk about that in the book. And through this powerful metaphysical experience, I felt as though I was somehow in touch with intelligences that were not, say, of this earth. Now, I am not unique in this. Other people have had similar experiences, both good and bad. I know people that walked into these crop circles and had to be taken out and were unable to move for 2 days.
By you mean they were comatose or something, or blithering, or what?
They felt as though, I remember one person that came on my radio show said that she had just felt as though all the energy was drained out of her, and she was simply unable to do anything for 2 days. Other people report euphoria.
I started to say, I've had people tell me about they just have an emotional uplift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What happened to you?
Well, I had a combination. I ventured into some sort of subconscious state that I can only describe as like a sort of an astral plane, perhaps. And in that, I was in some sort of instantaneous communication with these intelligences that, as I say, did not seem to be earthbound, did not seem to be originate from this earth. And what they imparted to me was that they have a limited access into our physical world. And one of those limited avenues was this transfer of energy that takes place out near this area. Now, whether it has something to do with this very mystical area that happens to be very close to Stonehenge, I'm not sure. If it has to do with the geology, it's unclear. But it is clear that they have been going on there for the better part of a 200 years. They've been reported back in the 1800s in this same part of Wiltshire, which is, as I say, very close to London.
Of course, crop circles happen other places too,
yep,
but England is the most famous.
They're popping up everywhere.
What do you make of it all? I mean, what is the deal?
Mm. I asked the same question to the farmers
that
live out there. There's a great pub called the Barge Inn, where a lot of this research takes place. And the pub owner, of course, have lived there for quite a long time. And he tells me that there are ley lines that crisscross this area. And ley lines are these sort of natural forming bands of energy that crisscross the earth. And a lot of people have tied them into the very sacred places like the pyramids of Egypt. And he reckoned that that had something to do with the abundance of crop circles in that area. And he even told me that a ley line ran right through his bar, and that the farmers somehow knew it. Because he said, when the men come in, they always sit on that side of the ley line. And when the women come in, for some reason, they sit on the other side. And sure enough, when he told me that, I looked around and he was absolutely right.
Is that because the female psyche is different than us males, or what?
I think it might have to do with some sort of polarization of energy.
Mm-hmm.
But more than that, he described to me that, and it's very seldom is it this talked about, but the farmers have had experiences, and they've had abduction experiences that relate to these crop circles, and that some of that is in this book when I talk about the people who actually plant the crops.
So you do cover abductions, too, in the book?
On a limited basis, as the farmers themselves tell it.
What do you make of abductions? You've been, I mean, we can't go to these UFO congresses without, and other conventions,
yeah,
without abductees talking to us.
It's true.
And you're in the media, too.
Absolutely. It's a part of this. And not only is it a current phenomenon, but as my research shows, it's been happening to the indigenous peoples going back thousands of years. So it's nothing new.
Rob Simone, it's always a pleasure talking with you. The name of the book is UFOs, Crop Circles, the Mayan Calendar, and Sacred Places, a collection of articles. How much is this book?
The price has not been yet determined. If you go to the website, by the time this airs, I'm sure it'll be up there.
Leave it to me to ask a question we don't have an answer for.
I'm sure it'll be answered soon enough. It literally just came out. You're looking at the first copy that has ever been printed.
Well, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting book. You have lots of pictures in there, too.
Over 50 pictures. I took most of them myself. Of the stone circles. There's a stone circle in Sweden that very few people know about.
You've been hanging out in California, more or less.
Los Angeles. That's where I live, yeah.
You going to stay there for a while?
I am in Los Angeles. It is where there's a lot of activity going on. I'm hoping to produce several television shows related to these phenomenons. And more on that, I guess, as it develops.
Well, great. We'll stay in contact. We're always a pleasure to see you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jerry.
Roberta Scott, our location producer, James Wortley, our technical editor. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin from the UFO Congress. Cheers.
The doors are finally open at shopjerrypippin.com. Explore our new iShop. It's open and growing. You can use any major credit card or your checking account with our PayPal connection. Our first edition t-shirt selections features three different Jerry Pippen UFO files designs. In addition, we will be adding collector t-shirts from select UFO conferences, as well as several novelty items. Check us out at shopjerrypippen.com.